Hey, this is Fish and Frank. Welcome to another On the Water with Captain Dan Latham. This has been a kind of a rainy day. It's the 9th of January here. And how was it out there today, Dan? Or how is it?
Wet, buddy, wet.
Well, the fisher.
It drizzled off and on all day long, Frank. From the time I picked my client my first trip up to the time I just dropped off, I mean, I just literally loaded the boat on the trailer. And it's a torrential downpour right now, but it drizzled all day. I really expected the fish just to be on fire. And it was okay, but it wasn't as good as I expected it to be. It kind of surprised me.
What happened, you figure?
I don't know. When I got up, the barometric pressure was below 30 and dropping, which generally, when you get those conditions, with the barometric pressure dropping like that and that low, the fish really charged up. I think part of the problem was the sun never came out, the water temperature still stayed very cool. So, the stuck and all that. I mean, this morning didn't do bad. I mean, we caught 10 or 15 reds, had 6 nice keepers, couple of sheathead. You know, my afternoon trip was the one that really kind of disappointed me. I expected it to be even better than my morning. You know, my morning was okay. I thought it was okay. It wasn't crazy good, but it was pretty good, you know. My afternoon, I caught a handful of small stuff, a couple of small trout. That was it.
Now,
that was it. And I dropped them off early because we had to run because it was coming with the lightning. So, but, I mean, I just, this afternoon was very disappointing for me. My morning was good. My afternoon was
disappointing. Yeah. What were you using for bait this morning?
This morning I caught everything I caught was on shrimp and ladyfish.
Now,
the first spot I stopped out caught about 10 or 12 trout. Only one good keeper. The rest were little guys, but we did want to catch a couple of ladyfish, and while I was headed in there to catch the trout, I put over a flat and saw quite a few reds. So I just simply troll motored over there and staked off and threw some ladyfish chunks out there. Within 5 minutes, we had one on. And then I was throwing some shrimp in there, too, and that's when they caught the two big sheepshead, really nice sheepshead, big ones. And then it went almost tip for tap between the shrimp and the ladyfish, Frank. It was almost even Steven.
Now, were you using free lining, using sinkers, jig heads, anything special?
No, I wasn't doing anything special. I just had it on a jig head. I was just throwing it out there in the sand and just kind of letting it sit there and telling my clients to work it back real, real slow and gentle. You know, with the ladyfish, obviously, it was just sitting there. But with the shrimp, I think that's why the shrimp was holding tip for tat, you know, because it was covering a little bit of water. I think the ladyfish was stinking better, but I think the shrimp was covering just as much water. And I will say this much, usually when you get something like that, like a lot of your smaller fish are on the shrimp, and the bigger fish are on the ladyfish chunk, and that was even seen. They were both catching, you know, decent quality fish, so. I mean, it wasn't bad this morning. Like I said, this afternoon was a little bit different. On the way back, I saw some birds die. I cast out some bait. And really expected this not to stop, so. And that just didn't happen. I just did the bait for the first hour or so on a couple spots. I went back to throwing ladyfish and shrimp, thinking, okay, you know, they're not eating white bait. They weren't eating the ladyfish and the shrimp either. So, they just weren't eating.
Well, I can hear thunder outside the building now, and once the electricity starts hitting the water, I don't know about you, but if I lived in the water and there was thunder and lightning there, I think I'd be a little, I wouldn't be thinking about eating, if you put it that way.
Yeah, you know what, I think that type of stuff does affect the fish. I really do. I think they eat out front of that stuff, but like I said, today the barometric pressure was moving beautifully, Frank. It wasn't too crazy windy. Actually, this morning and this afternoon, I wish it was a little windy. It finally picked up this afternoon. But it was one of those days where it was overcast and almost slick fall. So really difficult to see. And
all right. Well, Danny,
yeah.
I'm starting to lose you there a little bit.
Okay,
so,
buddy. Am I back?
Yeah, sort of. You're just starting to break up a little bit more here.
Well, I'm driving down Berkshire Road next to this big old transformer line. So it's kind of a weak spot.
Yeah.
So I should be out of it here in just a moment. Should be getting better and better.
Well, what's the name of your website, Danny?
It's realrelfishing.com.
Well, that was a good one.
Yeah.
R-E-E-L?
Yep, R-E-E-L-Fishing.com. Real fishing.
There you go. That was a good one. Yeah. Yeah, we're, if you click Danny's picture right next to this interview, and it will take you right to Danny's website. He's got some great pictures of fish, and you can kind of see what Danny does out there in the water and how it's working out. And that almost looks like Robin Leonard with a big snook on that one picture. I was just on his website looking at it. Nice tarpon jump in there. But now let's see if you're back at all. You there?
Hello. Oh, you lost me for a second, buddy.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. I think you're in that kind of dead zone over there in Bernstorff. But
yeah, well, like I said, a point of 41, it should be a better now.
It's getting a little bit better. Yeah.
Okay.
So, anyway, any good tips or tricks for somebody who might want to go out tomorrow?
You know what? If you're going to go out tomorrow, it's going to be post-month. You're going to have to slow up. You know, that's the main thing that I found recently is I was fishing too fast a lot of times. I was looking at my clients to fish a little too fast. And I really slowed things down a little bit and got a few more bites. You know, that doesn't work every day because you're, especially when you're throwing a shrimp in a jig, it's kind of like covering water versus slowing down. You see what I'm saying? So
yeah.
It's kind of like catch 22. You want to cover water so that you get your, you know, you present your bait to more fish. Make sense? But if it's going by too fast and they're not eating it, who cares? So you got to kind of find that happy medium. I was going tomorrow, I would. It's almost just the high 66. So I would fish and shrimp pretty tight to the bottom, and I would fish it pretty slow. I would really slow down.
So use a jig head. I'm going to say a Rockport Rattler. Give it a little bounce, and then let it sit for quite a while.
I've been getting my clients literally, Frank, do like a 3 to 5 second count between. And
3 to 5 second count for what? I kind of lost you on that.
Yeah, 3 to 5 second count before they move it a little bit.
That's
what I've been doing. I've been like, you know how you fish a pop, you know, the popping ports.
Right.
You know, you get them to pop it. It's client count to 3 to 5 to 7, whatever you want them to do. You tell them to pop it again. I'm doing the same thing with the jig. I'm literally throwing it out and I say, give it a 5 count and then move it. Just 6 inches. Give it a 5 count, do it all over again.
Well, that's great advice. Yeah, we've been hearing about redfish on the east side, Pine Island Sound, Gasparilla. It seems like there's quite a few reds around, not tons of keepers, but actually a lot of redfish getting out there, and some of them are getting a little bit bigger, close around the 20 inch range, you know. But
I agree with that. I've caught yesterday I had a really good redfish day. I caught 25 to 30 reds, and the majority of the fish, I did not have a single redfish, but I take that back, I had two at the end of the day that were oversized fish. But before that, I did not have a single redfish over 24 inches with the rest of them. They were all between, they were almost all keepers too, which was kind of weird. They're almost all between 18 and really realistically like 22 inches. And we had, we had one fish that was pushing plus 4. The rest were like, there's nice little 20, 22-inch fish cutters. And I didn't do it all in one spot. I did it 3 different spots, which were quite a long way apart. So I don't know, me going, okay, we got a good year class for that size fish. And I've been seeing that kind of everywhere. A lot of little guys, which is cool. That's the future.
Oh yeah, that's the next year. They're on the upper or in the middle upper slot, and the year after that, they're pushing that oversize. And once they hit around 30, they seem to take off and go into adults with the big schools or the big reds that come in next October. But I don't think these will leave yet. I think they'll still be too small.
Yeah, they're a little bit too small, and I agree with you. I think that when those fish get to that 30%+ range, well, a few of them stay around and soar, don't get wrong, but a lot of those fish leave. A lot of those fish, and they do their balling up and spawning, like you said, in September and October. A lot of those big whales that are even 32, 33, 34, I know that they join those big breed schools out there, and spend most of the rest of their life, you know, somewhere else, not on the flats, but offshore.
Oh yeah, they're pelagic, like you think Kobe or King mackerel. They'll leave and head to all parts unknown, and then they come back once a year to make more babies here, and then or every other year. And but that's been kind of the general run for redfish here forever.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And every once in a while, you know what? Before Charlie, we had a couple spots that would hold those big 20-pounders. Not giant schools. The schools are like maybe 30 to 50 fish. But they were those big ones, the big girls. Remember way back when we used to catch those things?
Yeah.
Right, before Charlie?
Yeah.
And after Charlie,
little cut between the islands on the east side.
Yeah. I mean, there was a couple of places. Now, if you still hear like this last fall, you know, I caught a couple 20-pound fish, you know what I mean? But it was like few and far between. It wasn't where you sit there and catch 10 of them, you know what I mean? Or even three or four in the course of two or three weeks. It was just like a fluke fish. But totally changed some things up here, you know that.
But it's the nature of the change. And a lot of the habitat where I used to catch those big year-round reds, the nice ones on the very upper end of the slot and over the slot, the habitat all changed with Charlie. The mangroves were destroyed. The whole bottom changed there. I mean, those places, I know it's the same place because of where it is, but it doesn't look anything like it used to.
Yeah. I mean, Charlie you and I have had this discussion. We probably hit the mangroves. We had a massive erosion problem on top of that. Filled in our deep tidal creeks. And the other thing that it did is it flattened out a lot of shorelines. I don't know if that makes sense, but around those islands, you used to have those deep troughs around them. They don't have that anymore.
Well, we had, I would say, 5, 6, 8 foot waves and 2, 3 feet of water that day. And it just kind of shuffled everything around, and that's exactly what happened to my old redfish spots where they were. And I've been telling the people with the estuary program, please let me go out there with a backhoe and a barge and fix the area back up. We'll have a lot more fish and a lot more wildlife. You know, that's what it takes, is the correct habitat. And Charlie destroyed a lot of it, and they won't let any of us fix it.
Yeah, it did. I mean, Charlie just wiped out It wiped out hot. It really did. And it changed things. I'll tell you what else it did that people don't realize. It wiped out huge expanses of grasslands, especially down the West Wall. And it wasn't just from the wind and everything, but it was the aftermath where the water just stayed ditch blocked for so long that it killed a lot of the grass up the, you know, up around Long Island and down the West Wall and stuff. A lot of that grass, you know, and there's grass here, but it's a different kind of grass. I'm very crazy at it. It's a lot of the turtle grass.
Yeah. No, you're exactly on the money with that. Yeah, I've seen all the same stuff, and I agree with you 100%. You know, everything changes, and we don't really allow nature to, I don't know how to say it, maybe we don't give it enough room to recover, and we want nature to recover itself without having the space to do it with.
Right, exactly. I totally agree with that. So, but things have changed. But you know what? Everything's a cycle, you know. So this too will change. Next year will be different than this year. The year after that will be different than the year after before. So every year is different. I have learned that, and guiding for so long. Every year is an adventure. Every month is an adventure. And that's kind of what makes it fun.
Well, do you remember last year we had a hard time finding redfish? There were not near as many redfish as this year. And, you know, everybody was complaining about it. And then this year we've got tons of redfish available. They're on the lower end of the slot, but they grew up and, you know, it all cycles out.
Yeah, it is. It's just a cycle, especially with a redfish, because a redfish, you don't realize, a redfish goes from being born to out of the slot 3 years. So basically, every 3 years you have something reloading. So, like we said, we were talking about those 20 acres. Well, guys, from like June, July, all that, those 20 inches are going to be 24 inches.
Right, and
they're going to be bigger fish. So
last year,
kind of expecting this fall to be phenomenal.
Yeah, last year, 3 years before that, we had that real bad red tide, and that's why we didn't have much redfish last year. And this year is the season, you know, the fourth year after the red tide, and we've got a bunch of redfish again.
Yeah, which is a good thing. Hopefully that trend will continue, and we'll have more the next year and more the next year. So, and I agree with you totally with the red tide. I think that about a red tide that wiped out all those reef schools really affected our redfish fishery. That's been, 4 years now, right?
Yep. So, you know, it was Charlie affected it. One, 3 years after Charlie, we had a slow year. Then we had that red tide. We had the freeze, you know, all these things. And people say, well, there was a lot of fish right after the storm. Of course there was. They didn't all die in the storm. But it kills the ones that are half inch, quarter inch long. You know, the little, the tiny fry. And those are the ones I worry about. You know, the great big snook and the big redfish, it's always sad when they die, but it's not the ones that are going to keep us. It's when you have a whole hatch that dies out, that's when it causes the big problems.
That's when you have big problems, when you have an entire hatch get, you know, an entire year class.
Yep.
Get devastated.
Now, like today, the rain is a very good thing. If we can keep this rain going where we keep just that little bit of fresh water coming down the Peace River, all the snook will leave the river, the canals, they'll all go out to the islands, and they will breed out there. The years where it's real dry, and then they spawn at the mouth of a canal or right in the river because it's got enough salt, then we get rain, and the rain wipes out 80% of the eggs. And so
I agree with that.
Because it doesn't bother the fish, but it does kill the eggs and the fry. They need the salt.
I agree with that. You're one of the few people that are like in the know and actually pay attention. Everybody says, oh, no, all the snook breed in the passes. Guys, they don't all breed in the passes.
Only if you have a wet year.
The jokers breeding in the mouth of the canals and all that stuff. If the salinity's right, they're going to breed wherever there's current.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if there's a motel next door, why would I drive to the next state? You know?
Exactly.
So, well, anyway, this has been Fish and Frank with Captain Danny Latham. And you click Danny's picture, it's going to take you right to his website. And you can book trips with Danny. He does back fishing, he does tarpon. And you're going to have an amazing day. I've fished with Danny many times, and he's one of the few people I still go out on a boat with. And I can tell you, Danny's a lot of fun to fish with. And give him a call. What's your phone number, Dan?
My cell phone is 941-628-6869. That's the best number to call me at.
And we're going to be doing more on the waters with Captain Dan Latham whenever we get a chance. And thank you guys so much for listening. Any last words, Captain Dan?
No, sir. Have a great day. Anybody's going fishing the next couple of days? Good luck.
Yeah, I'm going out with my dad in the next couple of days, so I get that.
Oh, cool. You and Frank Sr. are going. Awesome.
Yeah, I'm going to – I think there's a school of reds up by the house up there on that island. Just inside of 75. I want to go look
Absolutely.
At those.
Tomorrow would be a great day to go those for that northwest. That'd be a good day to fish up there.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's going to be real good. So I'm going to try and get out tomorrow afternoon with my dad. And I'm waiting to hear him. I think I've got a woman hired to do the bookkeeping so I can actually not have to do paperwork 6 hours a day. So all this would be good. This would all be good. I can be fishing Frank instead of paperwork Frank again.
Yeah.
So.
The pains you go through for success, but the better you do, the more paperwork there is too, isn't that the truth?
Oh, yeah. And it just gets messier. So, anyway, well, guys, once again, that was Captain Dan Latham there. And this is Fishing Frank saying thanks for listening. We'll catch you on the next Radio Fishing. Bye-bye.